Hey, you're about to listen to an older episode of the Volunteer Youth Worker podcast. This is a podcast that Sid Coop, Jason Ballard, and myself, Jeremy McDonald, started back in 2018 to answer the practical questions that you're asking in your youth ministry. But lots has changed since we started it in 2018. We've changed the name. We're doing new and different events and lots of other things. The thing that hasn't changed, though, is the content you're about to listen to, we think is still really valuable. But if you notice that some of the things we're talking about are obviously a little bit older, that is okay. You can always head to youthworker.community to stay up to date with what's happening currently right now here in 2024. And you can track along with us there. We'd love to see you. But enjoy this episode.
Hey, everybody, it's Sid and Jay from the Youth Ministry Team Podcast, and we want to invite you to two really great events that are coming up in the next couple of months.
The most important people, I think, in the entire world are youth volunteers and youth staff working across churches across Canada. So we've put two events together to help set you up for, we hope, one of the most effective falls of youth ministry in your life. And so the two events, first one is happening for church staff and nonprofit staff members. So if you work with youth in a staff position, August 19th, join us for a few hours online for training, inspiration, and encouragement. And then come back again with us on September 12th, but this time bring all of your volunteers. We're going to do a full training day to set you up and your team for a great fall.
Yeah. Hey, listen, we always say youth workers make an eternal difference, and you do. And the need for you in the life of a young people, in the life of young people to be present is more important now than ever before. So we want to help you do that better. Looking forward to it.
See you there.
Welcome to the Youth Ministry Team Podcast. Youth ministries rise and fall on the team of volunteers. So this podcast is for the whole team. Join the conversation as we tackle the practical questions you're asking so you can be encouraged and equipped as you head into your role in your youth ministry this week.
All right, welcome back, Youth Ministry Team Podcast. I am joined by Dr. Kevin. And Dr. Kevin, how do you say your last name? I just want to make sure I get this right.
Well, I usually say Scott, but I have immediate family members who say shut and shoot, so it doesn't really matter that much.
Oh, okay. So we got flexibility on it. That's awesome.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Well, this is such a, it's always fun to talk to official doctors. Now, you're not a medical doctor, of course. You're an academic doctor, which is wonderful. And this whole conversation that we're going to get a chance to have about video games and this industry that our teenagers are so involved with is one that, for some people, this is like so far removed from their reality. They have no idea. It's going to blow their mind, some of the things you're going to share. And then for others, you know, they're already playing, you know, all the Minecraft games with their kids. They're on Xbox Live, whatever it might be. And so we might just pique their interest on just some more strategic, thoughtful ways of engaging in this conversation. But before we get into all the practical stuff, how do you end up as a professor that gets to specialize or talk about video games? This is such, if there's any high school or middle school boy listening, it's like, that's the job I want. You've got it.
Yes. Well, I often introduce myself when I speak at like middle schools or high schools. I'll introduce myself that I get paid to play video games, which is not actually really mostly true, but it is at least partly true. So it's nice to be able to say that.
And that is the dream. That is the dream.
Yes,
I mean, I
yes,
remember thinking that in middle school as well. Yeah. So how do you end up in this world and kind of fill people in a bit on your academic work? Because I know you've written books on this and all that stuff. But give us the broad strokes.
So I when I went into graduate studies, I went into communication studies, and so I knew I was going to study pop culture. I started with some vague notion. I really didn't know what I was going to do. I thought maybe something to do with Disney or something like that. And then one of my very first graduate studies classes, the professor, who I grew to respect and admire tremendously, was turned around, looked at the room, and he says, you know, you're going to be studying for a long time. So if you're going to study, you should study something you love. And that was the moment where I pulled on my entire upbringing and a thought just popped into my head. And I thought, I wonder if they let you study computer games. and apparently they do. It was actually a culmination of a lifelong process at that point, because I'm old school. I mean, I grew up in the 80s got my first home computer in 1985 and was playing video games from the beginning. So it was just part of who I was. But I had never thought that you could do anything like that in academia. But by the year 2000, you know, video games are starting to become a huge cultural force, and not a whole ton of people in academia were talking about it. And so it just seemed like a bit of a gap, and it was, and I hit it just at the right time. There were a lot of other scholars that were creating this thing that today we call game studies. So that's, I joined in, and it's been a really exciting and fun place to do my scholarship.
Yeah. And so maybe give people the nuance of it, because you're not necessarily teaching classes on how to level up your character in World of Warcraft, which sometimes, you know, you see those, you know, if it's a BuzzFeed article or something like that, like there's an odd course, you know, offered at a different school. What is the academic study of this world like? Like, what is the approach?
So what I do is what we call cultural criticism. And basically, if you remember your high school literature classes, it's kind of like that, where you read a book and you talk about the book and you talk about, you know, what the author was getting at and all the rest of that kind of stuff. Games are in really, really important cultural forms. People learn about life. They learn about each other. They learn about creativity and all kinds of other things from games. And so we need to talk about those things and the kind of messages that are being sent and the kinds of ideas that are there and how they train us to think and to act. So that's the kind of stuff I talk about. And like you said, I wrote a book back in 2013 called Of Games and God, A Christian Exploration of Video Games. And it's all about, you know, how should Christians approach video games? How should they think about them? And that's the kind of stuff I do, is I play games and I think about them and I make arguments about what I think is good and what I think is bad about them.
Okay, so let's tackle that, because so I'm part way in, full transparency, I haven't read the whole thing yet. But what I love about this conversation is that that for some people, the idea that there could be good or positive things coming out of the community is almost just a non-existent thought. So, like, tell us, because there's so many negative stereotypes, right? Video games cause, you know, people to be more aggressive, or, you know, they're just sucking your brain away. Or you think about, like, a teenager, you know, and they're playing Halo all day on a Saturday. Like, shouldn't you go outside? All of that kind of stuff. Tell people that are maybe hesitant on this whole topic, is there anything good that could come from a video game?
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things that it's very easy when we're not familiar with something to sort of you know, demonize it, to make it kind of scary and something that we just don't trust. But here's the thing about video games. They are really, really good at a number of things. One of the things that they're really good at is challenging a certain kind of strategic thinking, problem solving, and things like that. That's most video games, really, when you boil them down, they're about problem solving. And mentally speaking, that's actually really good for us to exercise that part of our brain. Video games also create very compelling imaginary worlds. So just like we can get sucked into a great novel be, you know, just sort of transformed by a powerful movie, video games can really bring us into other places and help us enjoy all the benefits of fiction and imagination that way. And that also plays to another strength of video games, which is creativity. If you look at the video game culture and the video game world, it's incredible the variety of things that people do with video games and how they interact with each other. All you need to do is watch a 10-year-old with Minecraft for you know, a few minutes, and you will see people building and imagining and doing some stuff that will kind of blow your mind. And finally, one thing, the other thing that is clearly a major benefit of video games is socialization. And this sounds funny to some people, because of course their stereotype of video games is, like you said, the kids sitting in a basement playing Halo or Call of Duty or something like that, and they're just by themselves or yelling at their screen or something like that. How could that possibly be social? But in fact, the most popular games nowadays are in fact inherently multiplayer. You have to play with other people. You have to coordinate with other people. But even beyond that, just talking with other people about your favorite games and hanging out and playing them and talking about them and all that kind of stuff. Games are inherently social. And we kind of forgot that for a few decades because computers didn't, you know, were mostly single player games. But especially over the last 10 years, that myth has just been exploded. They are very, very social objects.
So let me press in on that, because it makes me think, and just as you're speaking, I'm realizing that that a lot of the activities we encourage kids to do, things like sport, you know, things like an art form or something like that, puts them into a community, like a socialized community. The only difference that I would see, I mean, obviously there's lots of differences, but maybe a strong difference would be in a lot of the in-person kind of things, there tends to be an adult mentor. So you think about like the hockey coach or, you know, the ballerina, I don't know what ballerina coach, is that maybe the word? I don't know. We'll have to look that up after. But your swim instructor, whatever it might be, it seems like there is that older person mentoring. Is that a gap of the socialization that happens in video games, that there's not that expressed adult presence, or what do you think about that?
That's an interesting point. And video games from the beginning have really been a sort of a youth culture thing. I would put them more in the category of movies and things like that, music, where generally same age groups sort of interact. But as you point out, because there is a community built around it, it can seem a little bit different. I think that there's definitely room for that adult presence. But I would say the experience of most kids is, yeah, that they play with their peers and they hang out with their peers in these spaces. Depending on the kind of game that you're talking about, I think it would be weird for some kids to have adults there. But there are other games where that adult presence would make a lot of sense. And I'm thinking specifically of esports, the competitive games where you have sort of teamwork building on things, and that's a pretty major part of the experience. And coaching and things like that are actually coming into those fields. Esports is still relatively new. It's less than a decade that it's become a sort of a big time thing. I mean, it's been around for over 20 years, but it's really been a mass phenomenon since 2011 or 2012. And so we're just starting to get to a point where some of the older gamers are, in fact, significantly older than the kids that are coming into it now. So there might be space for something like that. And that's a really interesting idea, sort of a mentorship role. But right now, typically, these spaces are the kinds of spaces you'd have with kids bonding over music. Your parents aren't going to hang out and bond with their kids over music so much. You might see youth workers doing that, right? And so I think there's definitely some space for that in the video game space as well.
Okay, so you mentioned esports, which again, when it first came out, there was a lot of maybe caricatures, you know, written about the esport industry, that there's big cash prizes for these teams playing these, and like, you know, audience members are cheering them on, different teams, that kind of stuff. Again, let's just give a broad, maybe some broad categories for people to understand what types of games are out there, what types of the community, fill people in a bit more on esport and some of the other game communities there are.
Sure. Yeah. So it's a bit challenging to do sort of a comprehensive look at all the games that are out there, because honestly, there are just so many different types. And I'll give you a few of the big ones, but I want people who are listening to sort of keep in mind that there are so many exceptions. So for example, I play a lot of like turn-based strategy games. Last night I was staying up way too late playing a game called Sid Meier's Civilization VI. And that's my poison. I'm a 40-some-year-old and I love that slow pace and strategic thinking. And most kids are not into that kind of thing. But for every kid that you like, for every game like that, you think, oh, there's no way there's a kid into it. There are. I mean, there are kids who are 12 who are playing Civilization. It's you know, it exists. And so when we talk about the video game industry as a whole, you just have to keep in mind it's even bigger than the movie industry. And so we can't really talk about them all. But let's talk about some of the biggest.
Wait,
stuff.
You said it's bigger than the movie industry?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It depends on exactly how you measure it, but the amount of money that is made worldwide by the video game industry exceeds that of box office takes of Hollywood and other major things like that. Yeah, it's a massive industry, over $100 billion a year, and it kind of depends on what you're talking about. Okay, so this is actually really important about video games.
Yeah.
Maybe you've heard before the term the bell curve, right? Where you get a group of people and there's a few people who are on the low end, you have a few people that are on the high end, but most people fall in the middle, right? So if you're talking about, you know, a bunch of grades in a class, most people get B's or C's. There's a few people at A and a few people at D. Most media, the usage of media falls in sort of a bell curve. Most people do an average amount, right? Video games are what we call a bimodal distribution in terms of how people play them. In other words, it's an inverse bell curve. There are lots of people who don't play very, very many video games at all. And there are a fair number of people who play tons of video games. And there's actually not a whole lot of people who play an average amount. So if you're not in that world, you kind of think of it as sort of this void. It's not really this, it's just not part of your world. It's not part of your life, and you don't really think about it. But for people who are in it, they spend a ton of money. They spend a ton of time there. And so people who are into gaming tend to be really into gaming. And so for people who aren't into gaming, it's actually a little bit difficult to understand.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, the game industry is huge.
Yeah. And huge. And I know it's hard to cast categories, but again, if somebody was kind of loosely like on that end of the curve, not knowing anything, like when our kids are talking about gaming, staying up late, typically what are teenagers talking about in terms of the games that they're playing?
So the biggest categories right now, the ones that grab the most attention, are esports, battle royale games, and first person shooters. And then there's a whole category of casual games that actually are pretty big time sinks that, you know, some of your youth workers will probably know quite a bit about as well. So esports is competitive video game playing, basically. It's people joining up on teams, usually. Sometimes it's a single person thing, and playing games in order to win in a competition structure, the same way that there's sports leagues. So the biggest ones are what we call MOBA games, or multiplayer online battle arenas. You may have heard of League of Legends or Dota 2. Those are the two biggest ones. There are a number of smaller ones that people play as well. And in these games, think of them almost like a really weird football field, where you have a bunch of people playing crazy sort of magical characters, but they're essentially fighting over a fixed field and trying to beat the other team by destroying their base, essentially.
So when we have teenagers playing these kinds of games, what are the chances that they are actually playing at a competitive level? Like, when does do we have teens in our group that are making money off of playing video games, or being sponsored? Yeah, like, how does that even go?
It's possible. Yeah, esports are big enough now. There's enough big money in it that you get the full range of experiences. So on the bottom end, you can think of it as the same thing as amateur sports, where kids are playing for fun and nothing else. You get some kids who have aspirations to make it to the big leagues, and so they're playing more competitively, but they're still at a fairly low level skill-wise. You get people who are in the sort of the minor leagues, who are really good players compared to your average player, but they're not in the big leagues and competitive. They'll probably be making some money from sponsors, but certainly not enough to, you know, pay for rent and get a scholarship for school. But they're still good. And then you range into the big stuff. The prize pool for the Dota International tournament every year exceeds $25 million, and so the top teams are coming away. The ones who win the Dota International tournaments are coming away with more than $10 million for winning that one tournament, and so there is money in this. There's big time money. More than likely, the kids that you know that are playing this game are playing it for something between fun and the entry level competitive stuff, because if they were higher than that, you'd know, because it's a big part of their identity, and they brag about it, and also they'll have a lot of money. So then they'll know a lot more about it than I do.
Yeah, sure. Okay, and one other question just about the different genres. First-person shooters, I know that there's, this is like a massively loaded question, so you can't go too far into it, but it looks like we're giving teenagers games where they can get take guns and go kill people, and that seems bad. On a number of different levels, especially when you consider, you know, cultural conversations just around violence and around, even current conversations like the use of force and the use of authority. And so to encourage that seems odd when so many kids are doing it. What's the take generally on the morality of a first-person shooter game?
So this is actually the area that I'm researching right now. So my scholarly research is working on moral and ethical decision making in games. And I think, you know, shooting people sort of falls into that category. There's a lot to say about this, and I'll try to cram it into just a few seconds. But I see both positives and negatives when people are playing violent games like that. Positives is probably not the right word. That it's not what we think it is frequently. I think that, first of all, it's really, really important for us to remind ourselves that what is happening in a video game is still, I don't know where virtual reality is going to be taking us at some point in the future, but right now, what we're doing in a video game is incredibly unlike real life. You don't shoot people by holding a joystick in your hand and pressing a button. It's a 2D screen. It's not. And if we ever stop and really think about it, we know, yeah, this is not like real life. But it sure looks like it. I think that, this is still early in my research, so I don't know what we're going to find in terms of evidence. But I think it's hard to completely get rid of the associations we have with the visuals. So we don't think of the thing in the game as sort of an abstract object. We think of it as a gun, right? And so it does have some resonance with real life. It does sort of connect to our everyday life. And I think there is something about teaching violence as a solution, not stopping to think as a way forward. Those are not particularly healthy things. But at the same time, what people are doing is clearly not real. And if you've ever played games, you realize that your consciousness very swiftly is not actually focused on the graphics. It's focused on the challenges. That's not the same thing as, you know, killing. Now, some players do, I think, play for that bloodlust sort of reason. They really do like seeing the gore and the pain and the suffering that they cause. And that's a little disturbing. But for a lot of players, you could easily replace the action with something that's far less violent, and they'd still enjoy it because the challenge is what they're after. And as proof of that, I mean, some of the most popular competitive shooting games are really not that graphically disturbing. Fortnite is one of the biggest shooters right now. It's a battle royale game where people fight to be the last person standing, essentially. To be honest, it's kind of goofy and cartoony, and yeah, they're shooting guns, but it doesn't, like, there's not, like, tons of blood splattering and really disturbing kills and stuff like that. It's really more about the competition. Think of it as tag from a distance rather than, brutal massacre of other people. It's like that. And Minecraft, another really popular game, really, really low quality graphics. There is combat in it, but it's like you're swinging a pixelated sword in front of you, and the object in front of you flashes red, and that's it. It's not the same kind of thing as really graphic violence. So I don't think that it has the negative effects on most players that people think, but I do think that there is some stuff to be concerned about and to talk about with young people for sure.
Yeah, so let's go there. Give us some ideas on how to have conversations, because, you know, the morality of any of this aside, there's teens in our small groups who are obviously really interested in the games that they play. And if we're, as youth workers, wanting to, you know, our hope is that we can lead them towards Jesus. Part of that is building this relationship where we actually know who they are, so that we can, you know, guide them along this road. And so in building that relationship and getting to know their interests, How do you talk about, or how do you suggest having conversations about video games and how they work out in our lives?
That's great. And I think that this is probably the most important thing I can talk about today. I think that our approach to it should be the same as our approach to any kind of thing that our kids are into that we don't know a whole lot about. It has to start with listening. Show an interest in what they're interested in and let them tell you about it. I think there's a mistaken notion from some adults that the only way I'm ever going to be able to talk to kids about games is if I become a gamer or I try to be a gamer myself. And certainly that helps. I mean, if you are the kind of youth leader who is really into Fortnite or League or something like that, you have a point of connection with a lot of your kids that other people aren't going to have. But same thing is true with someone who's into a particular, you know, rom-com movies or, Instagram or whatever it is that you're into. You get an advantage, but that doesn't mean that you can't connect with someone that you don't share that hobby with. It starts with listening. It starts with saying, hey, so what do you do? And then tell me about this game. Like, I don't really know anything about it. Explain it to me. And I tell you what, there are basically no kids who are into gaming that I've ever encountered that aren't absolutely overjoyed to tell you all about their favorite game. And just listening without any judgment is the first step. And you build that connection. And now when you actually listen and you pay attention and you learn about the game from their perspective, you have an opportunity to speak to that in a way that you wouldn't if you hadn't started with the listening part. But the second part, and I think this is really important, is the flip side of that is that I think a lot of adults are afraid to ever seriously challenge their youth about their game playing habits. And I think that's just as much a problem. And again, I don't see this as something that's limited to games. I mean, if we see youth engaged in something that we see as a particularly problematic, there should always be the opportunity to say something about it. I think that that youth workers should be able to push their kids on problematic things that they see in games. So this whole violence question, you may not be happy with my particular take on it. And that's totally fine. I respect that. I think that we do need to be asking these kids about this. So what are you thinking about when you're playing this game? So when you're running around and shooting demons in Doom, what are you thinking about? So if it wasn't demons, say it was like people, would that be different for you? Why would it be different? What do you think the line is? How would you draw that line? You know, you'll notice that these questions aren't direct challenges. They're not me coming in and saying, what you're doing is wrong and you need to think about it. It's more pointed questions that get them to actually think about what they're doing. Because I think with most kids especially, they don't think about it. It's not that it's necessarily having a hugely negative impact in their life, but there may be some negative aspects there, and they just aren't thinking about it. They're having fun playing the game, and they don't stop to go, okay, so what am I doing, right? I've been playing Breath of the Wild, which is a Legend of Zelda game, with my daughter the last few months, and you can do all kinds of crazy things in that game. And so, you can wander through the village and then just attack a dog and kill it, you know. Well, if you can do that, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Actually, I don't know if you can attack dogs. You can attack, you know, animals in the forest. Or I had to collect some wood, so I went through and I was blowing up all these trees so I could get bundles of wood. And I kept saying, oh, I feel so bad, I'm destroying this forest. And my daughter kept going, Dad, it's a game. They're not real. Well, so this is an opportunity, right? Okay, well, they aren't real, yes, but is it good to take images of trees and blow them up? Is it good to kill images of animals? Is that all right? And I'm not necessarily going to go for a particular answer, But I want her to think about it. I want her to sort of push herself on it. And I think we should be doing the same thing with our kids in our youth groups. We should be asking them questions that make them think about what they're doing.
This is so helpful. Can you give a couple of really targeted questions, maybe around either or both, if you want? The two big ones that I can think of is Minecraft and Fortnite as being, you know, ones obviously lots of people are playing. What would be like a nice hyper-targeted question that you might ask somebody that you know is really into Fortnite to make them think a little bit more about it? While you think, so this is the one I've tried, which is always a fun conversation, is, hey, that's awesome you play Fortnite. Have you ever spent money on Fortnite?
And then, that's a good topic.
And then usually the answer is yes. And I'm like, oh, how did you spend it? And did you like spending money on it? And where did you get the money for it? And surprisingly, it's usually their parents' credit card, of course, is attached to the account. So it leads to a really fascinating conversation about that one. But what are some targeted questions that can spark conversation for, you know, a youth worker?
So there would be a number of areas that I would be interested in. I'd be interested in how much they're playing. So, I mean, the question you ask is, how do you know when it's time to stop, right? Because I think that's an incredibly important question that a lot of kids don't have a great answer for. And by the way, I have to say that I am not a paragon of you know, shining virtue on this particular one. I ended up playing about an hour more of Civ 6 last night than I had intended to do, because I was like, oh, I gotta get some sleep tonight because I'm gonna be doing a podcast interview. and then I ended up staying up an hour later than I intended. So, you know, how do you know when it's time to quit? I think that's a really, really important question. Another area of interest to me is how you treat other players in the game. Because in a game like Fortnite, interaction can be a big part of the game, and people can be incredibly hostile and rude to each other. The culture surrounding certain games, League of Legends is particularly notorious for this, but lots of games have it. They have a sort of we sort of stereotype as locker room talk, where people are really crude and rude to each other. And it's all part of just sort of this jocular, joking kind of thing until it isn't. And then it can be really hurtful. How do you know when you've gone too far in your interactions with other players? Like, where do you draw your line? What's appropriate and what's okay to say to someone? What's not okay to say to someone? What kind of jokes are okay to make and what kind of jokes are not okay to make in a setting like that? Because that's, I think, often where I see some of the worst problems with these games is that people think of it, well, it's not real. So they can do and say all kinds of very hurtful things and get into some misogyny and, you know, homophobia and casual racism and, you know, stuff like that that is meant as a joke, but it's not in practice. And the kids often, because they're young and they're just in the moment, they don't really think through a lot of the things that they're saying. I think we have to really talk about, you know, a Christian witness even in a video game, right? So that's another area that I would certainly be asking about.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And as you said at the start, like, there's a thousand other things. Like, you just drop the line of Christian witness and it's like, oh yeah, isn't there a great opportunity to meet people who are far from Jesus in video games and have conversations about faith? And it makes me think about, I don't know if you saw, so one of the big churches in the US is Life Church. And back in the day, I think they had a Second Life service, Second Life being that a game of sorts that people were interacting on, and they would run church services inside of this virtual platform. I would love to chat about that. But as our time kind of closes in, we'll have to set this up again. But I would love for you to as a last question, talk about when we think about relational ministry, would you ever advocate for youth workers to try to find ways, not just to ask questions of teenagers, but to either join them in playing games or in watching them play games, which reminds me of my little sister growing up watching me play Zelda. But because we celebrate in youth ministry, oftentimes, you know, the leaders who go to hockey games to, or, you know, grab coffee with their students. And so especially in you know, world with COVID, there's maybe not as many hockey games or coffee shops where you can hang out with teens. But at the same time, they're playing games. They're right there. Is it worth wading into that? And how would you redeem, not that it needs to be redeemed, but how would you leverage that opportunity, I guess? Is that a fair question?
Yeah. The short answer is yes, please do. I think a lot of people are intimidated by their lack of gaming skill. That is a legitimate concern. But what I think we have to remind adults to do is to get over themselves. So it's okay to embarrass yourself in a game. My wife does not play video games very often, but she does occasionally, and my girls remember that, right? Like when mom plays Mario Kart with them, it sticks because it's sort of a, it's an example of reaching out and trying to connect. And I think a lot of kids really, really appreciate that kind of thing. Connect with them simply by trying to play with them. And you don't have to play for a super long time. You can sit there in a chat and, you know, the common gaming software that people use is a program called Discord. So you can sit on a Discord channel with them and continue talking after they've moved on to the next game. And you can just watch them play and instead of participating. But the fact that you tried goes a long, long ways. It gives you, there's a couple things it does for you. It shows to the kid that you're trying and you're actually taking interest in who they are and what they care about and what they're doing. It gives them a chance to be the expert on something, to school you and to show you how they're really competent at something. I think that that's actually really, really valuable. It also provides us as adults with a kind of humility that can be helpful in relationships as well. I think also it gives us a new perspective on this. It's like you don't really understand knitting until you try it. It's the same thing with gaming, right? Once you actually are in a gaming position and you have been in the middle of a game and you realize what it feels like, especially if you get at least half decently good at something, it's a whole new perspective on things, right? So if you're looking for a game that's an easy one to connect with, and this isn't as necessarily as easy to do over the internet as in person, but Super Smash Brothers on Nintendo is a brawl game. It's what we call a button masher. You can get really good at it, but it's also a game that someone can just jump in and just flail around and press a whole bunch of buttons and actually be half decent at it. So that's a good one. Mario Kart is another one. That's really, really accessible and lots of people enjoy it. Even kids who are into sort of hardcore gaming will play a few games of Mario Kart because it's kind of fun.
No, that's a good word.
I would say, you know, a game like League of Legends is not very accessible. And Fortnite is, if you go in, just be prepared to get killed almost immediately. But that's, you know, there are games out there and Minecraft is another one that's sort of good to hang out with kids in.
Yeah, for sure. So it makes me think too, even if there's a leader listening, you mentioned the Discord channel and I don't totally know how this works, but I'm assuming some teens could stream their gameplay and then be accessible on Discord. So yep. If you were asking,
Streaming is usually done on another service like Twitch or something like that. The Discord is usually for talking.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different ways of watching a game. And if you let the teenager set it up, they'll tell you how to do it.
Yeah. Cause I wonder if there's something like, if you're going to stream playing whatever game you're playing, let me log in so that we can chat while you're doing it. I'd love to watch it. Yes. You could fill me in. That could be an easy access way to perhaps, you know, honor them and celebrate them in whatever they're interested in. But
yeah, absolutely. Wow.
What a time. Okay. So obviously, Dr. Kevin, we have got lots more to chat about, but we do need to wrap things up for this time. So for anybody listening, you've got follow-up questions and you ever wanted to talk to a doctor of video games, which is forever what I'm going to assume that you're officially called.
Well, We do have a game development program at Trinity Western University where I teach, and so I guess you could call me a doctor of video games if you really wanted to. Yes,
that's exactly what I'm going to say often. But we would love to field some questions if there's some people that want to drop a line for the next conversation, some follow up. You can head to youthministry.team, and you can drop a line in their form, and we'll get in touch with Dr. Kevin. But also, I know you've got a book, you've got a program. How can people find you? What's the best places to go? And we'll link all this stuff in our show notes.
Great. Check out Trinity Western University's website. I have a profile on there. We also have our game development program there. If you look up twgamedevelopment.com, you'll find our program. I'm always happy to field questions and talk with people about any of these issues that are important to them.
That's awesome. And Of Games and God is available on Amazon, so we'll link that as well. People can check it out there. And that'd be great. Thanks so much for your time today. This is really fun. It makes me think I've got to go on the App Store and find some games to go play.
Yes.
And we'll look forward to another conversation very soon talking about video games and youth ministry. Thanks so much.
Thank you.